I've always watched him, you know, just getting a chance to see him up close, even when he started playing at Oklahoma. So met him a couple times. Great dude. Obviously, all the accolades that come with it are very well earned based on his body of work, his resume. You know, he can beat you in a variety of ways. There's a reason why it was kind of understood that, you know, he would be the number one overall pick, and I think that's been earned and merited. You watch the tape, there's a lot of really good things that you've seen. He's got really good players around him. Obviously, I think Shane does a really good job. So we have to do a great job of, you know, being ready to go, because Caleb can beat you in a variety of ways.
That's some generic kind coach speak, as we hear in the week leading up to an NFL game. Sean McVay getting pretty good at that. So let's talk about him and talk about the Rams with somebody who describes the Rams for a living. JB Long is on Twitter at JB_Long. The Rams radio play-by-play announcer is joining us now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com, twitch.tv/Chicago670. The Score. JB, thank you for joining us.
Dan, Big Ant, good morning. Thank you for the invitation. I'm here to bring you plenty of generic broadcaster speak.
Awesome. He's good at all of it. He can give you generic. He can give you alliteration. James Brown can certainly show you the versatility of what a sage veteran can do on the air.
So where are the Rams as far as their health? They seem to be missing people all over the field right now.
Yeah, decimated on the offensive line and at receiver in particular. No Cooper Kupp, no Puka Nacua. They came into this year with receiver probably being their deepest position. And they, for the first time this year, will have the same five starting offensive linemen in consecutive weeks. So I think the arrow is pointing upward there. Without Darius Williams at corner, he started the year on injured reserve, potentially their strongest cover corner. That's been a deficiency. Three straight weeks, you know, turning loose a 100-yard receiver with a touchdown, if not more. So that's a quick thumbnail on where the Rams are. I do see some similarities to the Bears, particularly in the department of like slow starts. And I think that lack of cohesion, especially on offense, is a byproduct.
So you could certainly make a case that the Rams could be 0-3 by the furious comeback they had in the fourth quarter in the previous game. You could also make a case the Rams could be 2-1. You know, based off a quality performance in the opening game against Detroit, does either version of that seem closer to who they've been through the first 3 weeks?
Well, Detroit was a coin toss, right? You know, they go down the field and get the walk-off touchdown. So that's like an overtime rule wrinkle. I thought the Rams competed really well, having basically lost three offensive linemen over the course of that game, in addition to Puka Nacua. I think kind of like the Bears having led for what, like less than 18 minutes or so combined this season. I think 0-3 is probably the truer reflection. If it's like Will Levis who gifted the Bears their win, it's probably Ronnie Bell dropping a ball for the 49ers to kind of open that door of possibility for the Rams to rally from down two touchdowns. But I would have a hard time making a good faith case that any team should be 2-1 or better, given the fact that they've trailed by two touchdowns in all three of their games.
Part of what we're dealing with here is the chasm between expectations and performance right now for the Bears. We thought it would look a whole lot better, regardless of outcome. We just thought it would be cleaner and better, and maybe those of us who've watched too much Bears football understood that there was no real good reason to think that, but it's a battle between heart and head in that regard. What is the similar situation regarding the Rams' performance relative to expectations?
Well, to be laughed off the score here, I'm a big like Thomas Brown fan. I like Shane Waldron. I do think that there's a better version of this offense in this story that Chicago will see before this year is over. I know a lot has been said about the best scenario that a 1-1 has ever walked into. I think there's some truth to that, and getting Keenan Allen back will make a huge difference. I know offensive line play is the issue. Expectations is kind of a tale of two stories for me. I think externally for the Rams coming into this year, they were pretty high, because everyone erroneously falls into the offseason trap of thinking that progress is linear in the National Football League. Mm-hmm. So given the fact that they far exceeded expectations last year, won 7 of their last 8 games, double-digit victories, like everyone just figured, okay, they're going to build on that. They draft the defense. It's going to look even better this year. They're going to compete for a division. I think I had a more tempered expectation for this year for no other reason than the Rams just lost the best player in franchise history, Aaron Donald. And that is a Canton-sized void on their defensive line, which I think they've done really well to fill to their best of their ability in just one offseason. But it's no surprise to me that they're among the most porous defensive teams in the National Football League through 3 weeks, in part because of how young they are and how green they are, in part because of their injuries, but also because I think they've played three of the best offenses in Detroit, Arizona, and San Francisco.
You can see JB Long at twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. Score middays, Dan Bernstein and Anthony Herron. And there's been so much conversation, you alluded to a moment ago, about the current Bears offensive coordinator, Shane Waldron, previous offensive coordinators who've been tasked with trying to nurture the skills and talents of first-round pick quarterback for the Bears in recent years. So a lot of that angst in Chicago is built up in there. You get to watch Sean McVay, one of the two or three, most folks would say, perhaps the best play caller in the National Football League. What are your observations about what makes Sean McVay so effective, so impactful as a play caller in game?
Yeah, I mean, he's a football savant, but there's a lot of those. And I think Sean would tell you that he gets too much credit for his football prowess, right? Like, you put him in a room with his peers, and I think he's sharp, I think he's special, but like, they all speak the same language. They've all got largely the same toolkit. I think what's always made Sean special is, you know, just he's a force of nature. His passion, his care factor, and his ability to communicate. Like, imagine walking in to an NFL facility at 30 years of age, having never been a head coach, right, and needing to make a bond with a bunch of players whose livelihoods are on the line. Like, to see him do that in just 1 year was one of the most memorable things I've ever seen in sports. And to see him mature as a man now and to go through multiple chapters of this coaching career, which is now on its eighth year, has been probably the privilege of my career. In terms of a play caller, I think, to answer your question more specifically, his ability to reinvent himself over and over and over again. At once, he's one of the more stubborn people in the National Football League in terms of just living and dying by 11 personnel, three receiver sets. You know, when he gets something that he likes, he takes it to the nth degree. But then you see a situation like last week where he's kind of, you know, reinventing the Rams in 2024 on the fly because they don't have Puka. They don't have Cooper Kupp. The things that make them special, marrying run and pass together with everything looking the same pre-snap, he realized that's no longer the strength of this roster as constituted. So I'm going to get an extra tight end up from the practice squad. I'm going to put some 12 out there. I'm going to bring Tutu Atwell back into the fold. I'm going to get Kyren Williams going, run and pass, take shots vertically. Like, that's not something that we've seen in the better part of a year and change now, but they were able to go to it in 1 week of game planning and beat one of the best teams in the National Football League because of his aptitude.
And because of your vantage point in being here for every step of the way, the transition from St. Louis, they come to L.A., you're watching the youthful version of Sean McVay, still fairly youthful, but to take over a franchise as kind of the, you know, the wunderkind when he took things over, we're watching a head coach kind of on the opposite end of that spectrum here in Chicago, and Matt Eberflus, who was a longtime assistant at the collegiate level, at the professional level, well-regarded defensive mind, and the Bears' defense, of course, exceptional again this season, but then managing his staff, managing the personalities on the roster, overseeing those elements of it. It sounds like you're describing Sean McVay as a guy who not only tactically is brilliant, but in managing the people in that organization as a leader, he's been exceptional in that regard also. How has that part played out for a guy who got the gig at a really young age?
Yeah, Anthony, that's really well said. And this is the part in the conversation where I always kind of interject, like, Sean's not perfect. You know, he's had dark moments. I remember the frigid night in 2018 when Vic Fangio, like, put an absolute lock on his offense and Jared Goff and changed the course of that entire year because Bill Belichick borrowed from it in the Super Bowl and the Rams didn't score a touchdown then either, right? So, Sean would be the first to tell you that he's started in the red zone in this profession because of his family history, that he's been granted opportunities that many of his peers have not. But again, I think that self-awareness, the fact that he can be one of those special people that when he's in the room, he makes you feel seen, I think would allow him to have success in whatever chosen profession he ultimately went down. Now, it happens to be football, but I think he'd be a great librarian, a wonderful lawyer, a good teacher, Maybe a great surgeon. Heaven forbid he ever go into politics, but maybe that could be a thing too. Like, because of his diligence, his aptitude, and his communication skills, I just think he would rise to the top.
We're talking with J.B. Long, Rams radio play-by-play announcer, as you're listening to a Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric Football Friday, presented by your local Ford dealers and IDOT, It's Not a Game, Illinois.com. And I was going to say something when you mentioned that the Rams lost the greatest player in Rams history in Aaron Donald. And I was about to think, oh, what, hold on a sec. Wait a second. And I'm starting to sort of catalog in my head and going through, hey, we got Marshall Faulk and Merlin Olsen and Eric Dickerson. And there's some other players who weren't half bad. But you know what? You're right. The more I think about it, I don't really even think it's that close that Aaron Donald is by far the best player. Deacon Jones, even, like, he may be the best defensive tackle of all time.
Yeah, there's a lot of recency bias in there, Dan, right? And I come through this with 21st century lenses. I get it. But being exposed to him as I have been, his credentials speak for themselves. And I would say this, and I would love to get Anthony's take on this too, on or off the air, to play that position and to basically have not one but two walk-off plays in the NFC Championship game and Super Bowl, like that is unprecedented. That's like hitting the game-winning home run, okay, in the ALCS and the World Series. But you do that at defensive tackle, a position where you don't even get to touch the football. And he clinched the NFC Championship against the Niners, a Super Bowl against the Bengals. Like, that whole season orbited around his prime and completed his trophy case. And to be his best when his best was required, to me, kind of tipped the scales so that I can confidently come on your show and say something like that now.
It was the modern iteration of Warren Sapp. You know, Warren Sapp sort of, you know, defined a generation of three technique interior defensive linemen, and Aaron Donald took that, you know, that skill set, put it in a box, shook it up, and then kind of, you know, ramped a little bit extra juice into it, and then, you know, sustained it with a great organization for a while here too. So hard to argue with what JB's talking about there.
JB, you mentioned something earlier I wanted to double back to about you are a fan of Shane Waldron's work?
Yes.
Why?
I appreciate him as a man, as a person. I know how much he meant to Sean, and what they did together. I think he did some good things in Seattle. I'm a big fan of Pete Carroll too, but I think that regime needed to change for the Seahawks in order for them to take the next step. And I think that's been borne out, but I think there's a version of Shane's offense with Caleb Williams and with the skill players they have here that's going to be super explosive. Clearly, I'm hoping for the Rams' sake that doesn't come to life here on Sunday, but I believe it's closer more than, you know, farther and distant into the future. And if I'm wrong, you can have me back in December and laugh at me. That's okay.
No, it's all right. I don't want to go too far down the road of like amateur personality profiling. But there are people in workplaces that say that, you know, introverts need to be managed differently, and or their thoughts can be applied differently. The only thing about Waldron is he seems a little awkward, a little nervous, and maybe it's just being an introvert. But I'd like to sort of unlock how he relates to players.
Yeah, and it's tough for me to project that onto his situation in Chicago, and especially with a rookie quarterback, because he was one piece of the brain power in the room, which is how it's always worked with Sean, right? As the head coach, as the architect, but ultimately as the play caller, he has the direct line through the communication system to the quarterback. That's how it was with Jared Goff. It's how it continues to be with Matthew Stafford, who in essence is a second offensive coordinator on the field. So Shane working with Goff and McVay, working with Geno in Seattle, now working with Caleb, each one of those dynamics is different, and I'm not sure how it's currently functioning. Clearly the results are not what anyone anticipated early on. But I would give it another cycle, another week, month, whatever you want to assess that period in before forming any judgment, because I know what stability means, right? And I know the Bears have not had it at coach, coordinator, or quarterback for so long that I would hate to see that vicious cycle repeat itself before we really get a sense of what Caleb and Shane are capable of together.
a 36-year-old Matt Stafford at this season in his career is a slightly different version of the Stafford that he was early in his career in Detroit. And then he got up and had this additional, you know, infusion of life in his career with this act that we've seen with the Rams. Now he's got this beat up offensive line in front of him, and his two best skill position players aren't around either. And he's still kind of finding a way. What does this version of Matt Stafford so far this season look like to you?
Yeah, look, I'm a huge fan of Jared Goff too, and he had some great years in Los Angeles. But what we're seeing right now is why the Rams ultimately felt like they had a chance to upgrade that position, because he has the superpower of elevating the other 10 around him. He doesn't have to have the best offensive line to thrive. He doesn't have to have Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua active to put up numbers. Like, Matthew Stafford, I think right now, is threading the perfect needle between knowing that he has one of the five best arms on the planet, but also playing at the most mature, sensible, not cautious, but like strategically lethal pattern of quarterbacking that I think he ever has. He's always had the reputation as a gunslinger, someone who can be a kingmaker for the like of Megatron and others. But right now, these last couple of years, I think he's put together some really MVP caliber moments because of his decision-making, because of his ball protection, and especially because what he's being asked to do pre and post snap. I think he's recaptured the imagination of the football cognoscenti, which is why, even though his resume is still lacking in some key areas, I think he's now on the yes side of that border between here and Canton. I think he's a future Hall of Famer.
Caleb's favorite quarterback. He said it multiple times. Caleb Williams, his number one quarterback in the league is Matthew Stafford.
JB Long, this is a delight. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Anything to cover a segment so that you don't have to have too much more chatter with Anthony Heron.
Hey, come on.
But you guys, as you know, have a great following. In fact, before I even came on, I'm staying with some friends here on the South Side, and their parents were texting them saying, did you know that your friend JB is going to be on with Dan and Big Ant? They said, yes, I did know that. He's down in my kitchen waiting to take that view.
Did you say like, you know that I'm also the play-by-play guy of the Rams?
No, I'm just here to visit and play a little golf and make sure I get a Pequod's before I leave.
Pequod's.
It reminds me of like when my parents will say something like, why didn't you tell us that you were on Channel 11? You were on TV. I'm like, I'm on the radio 4 hours a day. And they're like, yes, I know, but this was Channel 11.
Yeah, right.
JB, thank you.
All right, Dan, thank you. Love you, Big Ant. Have a good weekend, buddy.
Thanks, bro.